Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is going to be podcast 439. I'm entitling this podcast World War III for two reasons. One, ever since the Turks shot down a Russian jet in the present time frame, World War III has been trending on Twitter, so I figure I can get some clickbait by saying this podcast is entitled World War III. The second reason is it's coming up on Thanksgiving. I got the fireplace all fired up here. And I'm thinking, hey, sometimes these discussions at the table on Thanksgiving turn into World War III. So I'm going to give you some trolling bait for creating some fun discussions that could turn into quite an argument with Uncle Joe at the Thanksgiving table this Thanksgiving in the present time frame, which is coming up on Thursday in podcast 439, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, you've heard me talking about xgovernmentcars.com for years. Ed Johnson of X Government Cars has been a sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast since the beginning. And I was really excited when he told me that he was going to be opening X-Government Trucks in Forest Lake. And so xgovernmenttrucks.com is now open at 356 19th Street in Forest Lake, or you can call 763-777-8782 if you want directions or want to know what's up with them. I would just go to xgovernmenttrucks.com. Follow the links at the top of the Bob Davis Podcasts page. You see my Crown Vic there, and you click on that. It takes you to X Government Trucks or X Government Cars. You can find out what the stock is, what they have. The new Mega Truck Center in Forest Lake features dozens of the best brands, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. They also have the X Government Cars there, so the Crown Vics, the Dodge Chargers, the Ford Police Sedan, and so forth. If you're looking for a work truck, if you're looking for a van, if you're looking for a snowplow, if you're looking for, you know, any kind of truck, SUV, Expeditions, Yukons, Explorers, and so forth. This is the place to check out, and here's why. X Government Trucks has lenders for everybody at all credit levels, which is great. If you're in business, they can get you approved fast. Find your vehicle, then apply online for fast pre-approval, and you can drive right through there, so you can kind of snake through and see the inventory, and it's worth checking out. X Government Trucks has the 3-day peace of mind guarantee, so you buy with confidence, and as always, they love taking trades. And Ed always says, emphasize this, they take trades. Highest values are paid every day without all the bull that you usually encounter. So get out to xgovernmenttrucks.com today, 356 19th Street in Forest Lake. I've had 3 Crown Vics, and they are great. X Government Trucks and Cars is great after the sale. I have seen them help people. They've helped me. And of course, Mobile Podcast Command is also a Ford Super Duty 2000 ambulance, which came from X Government Trucks. Ed was super excited to find that for me, and so they can really help you out. X Government Trucks, and yes, I have the bullhorn. Here we go.
X Government Trucks.
So it's been a while since I just sat down and took a big hunk of the news of the day and read through it. And you know I have the love-hate relationship with news. Sometimes it's just a matter of looking at the contours of the news of a given day and going through it and, you know, just getting an idea of what's going on and being content with that. And sometimes, and lately, just as a matter of diligence, because I'm such a nocturnal person, you know, it's so hard for me to go to sleep early, which for me would be around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I just can't go to sleep until, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock. And then I want to get up because I don't want to sleep all day. And so I've resorted to the sad light to keep sunlight and taking calcium / vitamin D in order to keep sort of, you know, on an even keel. And so I'm not sure if I'm in a good mood or what is going on, but it is like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning right now. And I've decided I got to do a podcast. And before I did one, I'm starting to, I guess I don't want to say I was depressed because that's really not fair, but it's always hard for me to make this adjustment in November and December because there's virtually no sunlight. And, you know, being nocturnal, I won't see the sunrise. And when I was doing mornings, you know, people who do nights have the ability to move their schedule around more easily than people who are morning people. Morning people cannot get a leg up after 9:30 p.m. and they're pretty much stuck with that schedule. But if you're a night person, it's a little bit more easy for you, it's a little easier for you to make that adjustment. And so night people, and this is true, you know, the night jocks at the radio stations are the ones that usually end up doing the morning show because their schedules are more easily adjusted. And so because of my energy, and, you know, people thought, oh, this guy'd be great for morning drive. And so I'm the one that got tapped to do mornings. And so I was able to flip my schedule around. And one of the things I noticed when I was doing mornings was, you know, when you're getting up and doing that early morning schedule, whether you have to be on the air at 5 a.m. or 4:30, I mean, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, you have to get up at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was always really hard for me to do that. And so I kind of just slept in shifts. So, and you never really get, you know, it's just an unhealthy schedule. But the thing that's very interesting about it is in the winter months, so when the sun really starts to not set, and I don't know if you've noticed the angle of the sun. We've had some nice sunny days, and today was beautiful. The weather is fantastic. Today was beautiful, but the sun, you know, at its highest point around noon, it's still pretty low in the sky, and then it sets. And, you know, this is like Alaska up here in the northern tier. We have so many hours of darkness, and because the sun is so low anyway, even the hours of light are not exactly really light, especially if you have a cloudy day. So I'm not seeing the sunshine very much. And one of the interesting stories about doing mornings was it was the same thing. When you're on that early morning schedule, you never see the sunrise because you do the show. You'll see the sunrise while you're on the air, you know, because if you're on the air till 9 o'clock, you see the sun come up. But you go home, you take a nap, and you get up at 3 or 4 in the afternoon from the nap to get ready for tomorrow's show. And, you know, there you go. So I saw a little bit more sunshine in those days. But I was talking to a friend of mine this week, and I was remembering that during that period, more than once when I was doing mornings, the alarm would go off, or I'd wake up at 4:30 p.m. and I had one of those digital alarm clocks, but it wasn't set to military time. So I'd look over at the alarm clock and it would say 4:30 or 5 o'clock or 5:30, and I would freak out and I would get up and throw my clothes on, grab my show prep, run downstairs, get in the car, start it up, drive to wherever I was heading. And when I was working at KSDP, I'd be on 94 East at like 5:30 p.m. and I'd be like, what's going on? Like, why is there so much traffic? This actually happened. I'd be like, why is there so much traffic? And then I turned on the radio and the afternoon guy was on. And I'm like, why is Suchere on right now? Why are they rerunning the show, or what's going on? Maybe Art Bell was on vacation or something and they decided to rerun the morning show in the middle of the night. And then it slowly dawned on me. No. It is not 4:30 a.m., 5:30 a.m., 6:30 a.m. It is 6:30 p.m. And that happened to me more than once. So it's just bizarre. And I've got that sort of same weird kind of thing going on. So, but at the same time, I am, and by the way I handled that is I now have military time on my phones and my clocks wherever I can, because then I know 16:30 is 4:30 p.m. So I know that when I look at the military time, there's not going to be any chance that I jump up out of bed and run off to an appointment because I'm confused. But I'm starting to feel better because I'm taking the calcium and sitting in front of the SAD light, which is that bright sunlight kind of simulator, for half hour to 20 minutes every day, and it makes a huge difference. So I'm re-engaging with the news, and it'll probably depress me again, but I'm re-engaging, and I have, you know, a big hunk of news here that I think what I'm going to do is just throw these out, and you can use these for, you know, just argument bait at the Thanksgiving table this weekend, because this podcast is being done for Wednesday and Thursday. So you guys in the present time frame, day before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving, isn't Thanksgiving on Thursday? You know, all the calendars have the 26th, which is Wednesday. Okay, right. So this is Wednesday. It's the 25th, and then the 26th is Thursday. Anyway, you see how confused I am. I actually went through and read all this stuff and then reorganized it. So these are going to be some conversation starters for you at the Thanksgiving table, which may or may not start World War III. And speaking of World War III, This is very interesting, coming on the heels of two podcasts about foreign policy, podcast 437 and 438, in which I talk about the need for this country to develop a new foreign policy and really new policies about where we want to go and who we want to be and how we want to do what we're doing. And that's not happening in this election season, which we're going to talk about a little bit in this podcast too. But this is the day in which the Turks shot down a Russian jet. And, you know, I just started to read some details. And the thing that is interesting to me is this jet, this Russian Su-24, which is a bomber, flew into Turkish airspace, only about a mile into Turkish airspace, and it was shot down by two F-16s. And then they sent a helicopter to recover one of the downed pilots. The other one was killed by the by I don't know who. And they sent an Mi-26 helicopter or whatever it is, an Mi, the big old tank, flying tank that the Russians have, was sent in to get this this pilot, and the helicopter was downed by a U.S.-made TOW missile. We have sold these rebels the TOW missiles, or given the TOW missiles to these rebels, because they're supposedly fighting Syria, fighting Assad and fighting in Syria. So because the Russians are now coming in on the side of Assad, I guess it's fair game for these American-supplied rebels or whatever they are to shoot down the Russian plane. We don't know. I don't know which group shot it down. And I don't know that it's that important. The thing that's important here is this is going to cause tensions to rise. It's in some ways going to scuttle the French effort to come in and fight ISIS. And it just shows you what happens when there is no overarching policy regarding how to handle this. And this, as this thing metastasized, and I think that that is a great name for this, there is really no way to sort of reset this at this point. It's just kind of it's kind of a sad situation, and I don't think we have a president who is really the kind of guy, structurally speaking, personality speaking, who really has an idea of what he wants to do. You know, there's all these stories coming out now about how and Fox is putting this out with, by the way, no sources. So it's irritating to me that there are no sources for these stories, but Fox is putting out these stories that say that the president, the president's staff has told CIA and the FBI they don't want to see information that the president doesn't agree with. And he is already throwing the intelligence community under the bus, and he's saying, we're going to get to the bottom of this. In fact, because I told these people, I want the clear, unvarnished truth. And yet people like Leon Panetta are writing. Leon Panetta was the former Secretary of Defense in the Obama administration, also a Clinton operative who is saying, the head of the CIA. I'm sorry, he was the head of the CIA. I think he was the defense, you know, at one point he was head of the CIA, and at one point I thought he was also the defense secretary. But anyway, Panetta is saying that President Obama is too cold. He's a cold fish, and he has this sort of, you know, professorial process, no drama Obama, remember? And he doesn't have the fire to lead when the fire is required. But he also said in his book that one of the things about Obama is he doesn't like hearing information he doesn't agree with. So, you know, the thing about it is, these people who serve presidents, whether they are Republican or Democrat, generally tend to be sycophants. You know, they're there, you know, with their, they're getting their sinecure. And even though their positions require them to serve the government of the United States, they are loath to present information that's going to piss off the chief executive. And so Obama's got a view in his mind. He's got a framework in his mind of how he wants things to be and how he thinks of the world. And people are pretty quick to figure that stuff out. And any of you who have worked for a chief executive or a powerful individual know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you got to pick your battles, and you got to figure out when you're going to present something to somebody that they aren't going to like, because you never know when the desk is going to get cleared and they're going to start screaming and yelling, and you could be out of a job on Christmas Day, because it happens. So it's very interesting. And if you want to start some fun at the Christmas or the Thanksgiving table, bringing stuff like this up should provoke quite a discussion, because right now everyone is very, 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 very upset and worked up and angry and frustrated and fear. And the next thing, of course, is going to be this question of whether or not there are going to be copycat or actual attacks by ISIS or Boko Haram or some form of Al-Qaeda elements in the United States over the Thanksgiving or Christmas holidays. They have vowed that they are going to attack the United States. And if they're the same level as the Paris attacks or greater, you're going to see a completely different conversation being held in this country. And I am loath to even anticipate it. But as I have said for a long time, I don't think this president is going to leave office without the bill being presented for his management of foreign affairs and the economy. We'll see. But I think he's going to be hard-pressed to get out from underneath what he has done or not done as president. Now, if you agree with President Obama, if you like his policies, if you think that he's great, then that's your prerogative. You can believe that. But you're also going to see the cost of some of those policies, just as people who supported President Bush and thought he could do no wrong, found out the hard way what the costs of these kinds of policies are. And I guess the takeaway is when you advocate vociferously for a particular personality, it doesn't matter who it is, and it doesn't matter whether they're a progressive or a Democrat or a Republican or a libertarian or whatever they are. When they become the chief executive or a congressman or a senator, when they become part of the larger maw, which is the government, things don't happen the way you think that they're going to happen or the way that you would have envisioned that they happen. They happen sometimes badly. They come out misshapen and stillborn and confused. And the idea of a clarity or, you know, the idea of creating a policy that had this crystal diamond clarity at one point, when it finally gets implemented, it doesn't always have that clarity. And I give you as an example the ISIS situation or the Assad situation or the situation in the Middle East or the situation with the economy as examples of what happens when you think you have this clarity and you implement these policies and they have to go through Congress and they have to go through the executive branch, they have to go through the military, bad things happen and no one can predict the outcome of those things. And this is the idea of, I suppose, do no harm in the sense that the legal term of do no harm or letting sleeping dogs lie or don't mess with things that you don't understand because you never know what's going to happen on the outside. So this is my issue with supporting these candidates who have a certain personality or a certain set of plans. And I refuse to do it because you don't know what you're going to get, whether you get a Republican or a Democrat, and you don't know what's going to happen. I think it's going to be happening. I think that this bill, this problem, these problems that have been sort of built up due to the policy of this administration are going to build up and have an effect long before President Obama leaves office. So if you're traveling this weekend, be careful and keep your head on a swivel. If you are in the airports, if you're at the mall, if you're out at a concert or something like that, you would be well advised to pay attention because forewarned is forearmed, right? Well, it's going to start getting cold. We get after Thanksgiving and, you know, the chances of it being warm, and I mean above freezing in Minnesota, are slim and none, which means we're going to start to see below zero temperatures. Now, I've been telling people to get their heating and their plumbing and their water heaters checked with Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. And of course, you can still do that. You can call them at 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6480. And you should do that. But here's another reason to maintain those numbers somewhere, just like a sticker on your water heater, because the chances that you're going to need emergency service in some way, shape, or form with plumbing this winter are also good. So Ryan does great emergency service. So make sure that you give them a call if you have an emergency. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Somebody asked me not too long ago, well, I was going to call them, but I live in the suburbs, not St. Paul or Minneapolis. Ryan goes all over the metro. You'll see their trucks all over the place, whether it's Invergrove or Lakeville or, you know, St. Louis Park or Plymouth, you know, all over the north, west, south, and east metros. East St. Paul, West St. Paul, you know, White Bear Lake, they're out there and they're out there running around. Also, for businesses, you know, I always talk about residential, but, you know, Ryan does a lot of business stuff. Quality replacement replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. So if you're looking for help with plumbing on your business level, at least get an estimate from Ryan. On University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating, metro-wide from St. Paul. In St. Paul, call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I was just talking about personalities in politics. And we're at the stage now, just in the sort of the pre-primary stage. We have caucuses and primaries coming up in less than, 60 days? Just about. By December 1st, it'll be 60 days because the Iowa caucus is February 1st. Shortly after that, we have New Hampshire, and then we have South Carolina. And so we're really in the pre-primary phase, both of coverage, polling, and actual voting starting February 1st. I'm not under any illusions about what's going to happen compared to polling once people start voting, particularly in Iowa, because Iowa is a caucus, and caucuses can be overwhelmed by organization. And this is something people need to understand. This is one of the reasons that insurgent candidates generally win in Iowa, because they're able to overwhelm organizations. You know, everybody in the Republican Party is talking about Donald Trump, and really hilariously talking about Donald Trump. And I'm going to make a prediction. There's a very good chance that Ted Cruz could win the Iowa primary, because the largest number of voters in the Iowa caucuses – I hate to call it a primary. I'm sorry. The Iowa caucuses are Christian evangelicals. So unless Trump has a really large, effective organization in Iowa – the fact that Ted Cruz does have a powerful organization in Iowa means that it's possible that he could win. Remember, Michelle Bachmann won the Iowa primary not too many years ago, and everyone was shocked and surprised, and it really fueled her campaign for the presidency for quite some time after that. So there's that. The thing is, Donald Trump will probably win New Hampshire. We'll see what happens, but he's leading in New Hampshire currently, and then after that, it's a crapshoot. And we are starting to see the Republican establishment, and I can't stand the Republican establishment, the Vin Webbers of the world and the John Boehners of the world, not because they're bad people or good people or anything like that. It's not a personal thing, but because I think that their time is over. I think that they come from an era where you were able to cobble together Christian evangelicals and social conservatives, libertarian type Republicans, and mainstream strong on defense anti-Soviet Republicans, the so-called Reagan coalition. And you were able to do that for a long time. The quote-unquote war on terror helped keep that together for a few more years. But people are increasingly distrustful of government for lots and lots of different reasons, and the grip on the imagination and the control of the voter and control of the Republican Party by moderate establishment types is fading. And Donald Trump is merely a symptom of that, the beginning of that power vacuum. And they are freaking out because of the possibility that Donald Trump could very quickly roll up enough victories to clearly have the nomination for the Republican Party for presidential candidacy in 2016. And honestly, everyone is freaking. The Star Tribune ran a piece that was just hilarious, because everyone is just, Donald Trump is repugnant, and he has recklessly disregarded moral and political consequences of his actions, and he's a horrible person. And, you know, they ought to go back and they ought to look at Andrew Jackson if they wanted to see that kind of campaigning. For lack of a better term, he's tapped in to the anger and frustration that people feel that government isn't doing what they expect it to do or what it should do, because problems aren't getting solved by this president or by this Congress or by the congressmen's any of the Congresses in the last, 6 years, maybe 8 years, maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years in this country, and maybe even 20 years. We are not solving the problems. We keep having these problems come up. We keep having these problems coming up about overspending and debt and, foreign involvement and wars and terror attacks and people getting – we are now at each other's throats, a very slow growth economy, and people are real sick and tired of it. And so they're willing to take a risk and turn to someone like Donald Trump. And let me tell you something. Now the conventional wisdom is, well, Donald Trump can't win a general election. But all the polls that I see indicate him running quite well against Hillary Clinton. And it is also true, and some people have already written this week, that the reality is that because everyone's talking about Donald Trump and the idiot Republicans, they aren't talking about Hillary Clinton. And just a quick review of the news in any given day, today in particular, reveals all kinds of silly things that are being presented and talked about by Democrats, including Hillary Clinton and especially Bernie Sanders. You know, I read Bernie Sanders' 12 Reasons to Be a Democratic Socialist this week, and there isn't a single scintilla of any substance in anything he says at all. So you can criticize Donald Trump all day long, but when you actually look at what Bernie Sanders is saying, it's the same kind of rhetoric. It's just rhetoric directed at a different sociographic group that thinks that everything is the bank's fault, and we need to have free college and free health care and free everything, and we're going to make the rich people pay for it. And it's the French Revolution all over again. Let's behead all the rich people and take their resources. And oh, by the way, we'll do that on Monday. And on Wednesday, we'll run out of money and we won't know what to do. So we'll just behead the next tier and take their resources because there are no free lunches. So there is no shortage of insanity in both parties. And Donald Trump is certainly not the only one. But I would just ask Republicans who think they can't win with Donald Trump, and I'm not supporting Trump, but I would just ask Republicans who think that they can't win with Donald Trump and that something has to be done and we need to run ads now, we need to have a guerrilla campaign to bring down Donald Trump. Who, if not Donald Trump, who do they think is going to be able to attract the same level of attention to the Republican Party? Because it isn't going to be Jeb Bush, and it isn't going to be Marco Rubio, because the room will rapidly empty because these guys haven't got any personality. And why? Because they won't say what they think. They just say what somebody told them to say. They are so overmanaged and over-controlled, and they're so willing to become the slaves of campaign consultants and everyone else, that they're not interesting. And so this is why Donald Trump attracts huge audiences to debates. And this is why Donald Trump continues to be a candidate who can appeal to people who, quote unquote, are independent or on the fence, and can appeal to people who are both, Christian conservatives as well as libertarians or people that are just angry at the government. And there aren't very many people writing about it. Josh Krushar, I can't even say his name, wrote a piece today that said, if you actually take a look at it, Nate Silver and all the rest of you, apologists for the Democratic Party, the Republicans actually hold the edge for the 2016 presidential race. I would advise everyone to read that one. And if you go through these states, the other thing that you can do, and I'll probably do it before we get to the primaries, but if you actually go through the states and look at the polls in the states, and again, polling is really dangerous to look at it because you're not looking at likely voters so much as you're looking at people who are interested in the campaigns right now, and they're a small subset of most people, as you'll find out at the Thanksgiving table if you start talking about this. But if the Republican donors want to fuel an anti-Trump ad blitz and get rid of Donald Trump, who do they have? They have Ben Carson. They want to get rid of him too because he's not an establishment candidate. They have Marco Rubio, who does not have the same star power as a Donald Trump or the name recognition of a Donald Trump, which is really, really important. It's one of the reasons Hillary Clinton is leading the Democrat side because of name recognition. And they're left with a cavalcade of idiots, with all due respect, who are, Jeb Bush is one of the biggest disappointments for Republicans that I think I've ever seen in my life. He was purported to be this incredible candidate, and he has literally crashed and burned. It's the people that are going to be running this campaign against Donald Trump are all of his bobos, the Bush bobos, who are in the background, in the shards and in the shadows, who are going to run this campaign in the hopes that they can rehabilitate Jeb exclamation point. And he's a freaking disaster. What else is going on? Just quickly, I mentioned the economy a little earlier, and I want to get this very quickly. Every time they issue these economic numbers, and the last one was the GDP was growing by 1.5%, they issue revisions. And so there usually are two immediate revisions and then a third or fourth revision later on. So, because as new information comes in, they revise economic growth. Sometimes they revise it up, sometimes they revise it down. In this case, they just revised the third quarter GDP up to 2.5% from 1.5%. And the chief reason for this was the accumulation of inventories in business. And the thing that I love about this is that it goes to this whole long thing about how the economy grew at a healthier clip, largely because of inventory growth. And then you find out that they're not selling the inventories. And then you see this line. This is from Reuters. That, however, suggests inventories could be a drag on fourth quarter growth. The bigger inventory overhang helps explain why manufacturing sentiment remains cautious early in the fourth quarter and does present downside risk for our 2.5% estimate for current quarter GDP growth. There you go. That's a JP Morgan quote. So what does it mean? Well, we're worried about China. We're worried about the lack of investment. We're worried about, low demand for, lots of things in terms of inventories. We're worried about a buildup of petroleum supplies, which is pushing the price down. We're worried about deflation. And there are various suggestions for how to fix that, the most silliest of which is we need more efficient and focused government investment in the economy, as if we haven't had enough of that in the last, 8 years, 6 years since the president, since this president became, was put in office. It doesn't work. It's not working. And so that's what many of these people are suggesting. Watch for that. If we would just invest more money in the economy, if we gave people free college, if we raised the minimum wage, if we did these things, then we would see the economy would explode. That's not going to make the economy explode. We got to get a handle on the deficit. We've got to get a handle on corporate taxes. We've got to get a handle on spending. And we've got to get a handle on too much regulation. And we've got to get a handle on the Affordable Care Act. These are the things that are having the biggest impact on economy, because people aren't spending the money because they know they're going to have these 16 and 17 and 20 and 23% increases in insurance premiums. That's one of the things. Where do you think all this extra money that people are saving from paying $2 a gallon for gasoline is going? It's going into the kitty because guess what? We got an insurance bill next week. And then you get articles like this, which I love. This is from MarketWatch. I hate MarketWatch. CBS is the company that – this is their thing, CBS MarketWatch. They come up with some of the craziest things for economic analysis I think I've ever seen. And this one is, especially this weekend, for those of you who are going to be doing some Black Friday shopping, we are told that the American mall is now dying. And this is the reason that the retail numbers are going down. And the proof of that is nothing but stock prices and how big companies like Nordstrom and Macy's and JCPenney's and the big box retailers, which anchor a lot of these malls, are starting to report lower earnings. And so their stock prices are falling. Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, The implication here is that the whole retail spending problem in this country is simply that people don't go to the mall anymore. They're going to boutique shops and buying stuff online. Well, no, that's nonsense. I'm not saying that they're not going to the mall. Retail spending is down. Consumer confidence is down because people are unsure about the economy. And this is another one of those chickens coming home to roost thing, because we are told constantly, and they did it in this just last article that said, oh, the economy unexpectedly contracted or went down to 1.5% economic growth in the third quarter. Even though we're revising it, it was unexpected because everyone expects it to get better without anything really changing. And the chickens are coming home to roost, meaning we have had an enormous amount of government spending. We've had an enormous amount of central bank stimulus in the form of quantitative easing, Operation Twist, all sorts of programs, buying securities and pumping money into the economy through the TARP, as well as the infamous stimulus program that was $1 trillion and everything else. And the economy continues to fall back. Same thing happened in Japan with Abenomics, which is the, Abe is the, isn't that how you pronounce his name, is the prime minister of Japan. And the idea was they were going to spend all this money on public works and it was going to make the economy grow. And now they too have slipped back. Actually, they've slipped all the way back into recession. So government spending doesn't stimulate the economy. Individuals stimulate the economy, and small businesses and big businesses stimulate the economy. And the economy is a force of nature. The idea that you can pull levers and control it by pushing money in here and that money comes out over here miraculously is a misnomer. So that's something to be aware of, and that would start quite a good argument if you were into it at the Thanksgiving dinner table. And then I guess finally, I can't resist this. I this is one of the reasons that sometimes I just can't read the news. This is great. So I'm sure you're aware of the big argument about Princeton University. Woodrow Wilson was the school's president from 1902 to 1910. He reformed it, he transformed it, and set it on a path to academic excellence. So I forget the guy's name, Richard Cohn, and it was either in the Washington Post, but this has been reprinted in Real Clear Politics, wrote a piece defending Wilson as a great progressive, and that what we need to learn is that we can't – someone can be a great progressive. Here's a list of the things that he did. Wilson, the severe-looking president, was in many ways a transformational progressive. He advocated the women's right to vote, which turned into the 19th Amendment, the 8-hour workday. He supported the Clayton Antitrust Act, as well as the creation of the Federal Reserve and the Federal Trade Commission. He also backed the implementation of the federal income tax, a progressive way for the government to raise funds, which will make many of you laugh out loud. So suddenly now Wilson is a progressive hero. Well, he is a progressive hero. And of course, the Bolsheviks at Princeton want his name expunged and erased from the school's, I don't know what you'd call it, a citadel or its wall of fame that they want Wilson removed from the history of the university because he was a terrible person, because he was a racist, literally, and he believed in separatism and he supported Jim Crow laws and so forth. And this guy is saying, well, we need to understand that many of these people were this, and they were also a great progressive. And he trots out George Washington and Jefferson as slave owners. He trots out Wilson as well as Jackson Jackson was hard on the Indians. Well, I hate to tell you this, but Andrew Jackson was also one of the largest slaveholders in America at the time and traded, he did not only was he a slave owner, he was I think he was the largest slave owner in the United States and actively and avidly traded human beings. So Andrew Jackson, who of course is the first real Democrat, and Woodrow Wilson, who is the first real progressive, we couldn't possibly tarnish their names. It's okay to tarnish a Republican with like Donald Trump with being called a racist and everything and a nativist and everything else. But we have to understand, instead of saying but, we have to say and. So in the case of Woodrow Wilson, he was a racist. And he was also a really great progressive. So we have to protect the progressive view of politics and the progressive, place in history. So we really can't call Woodrow Wilson a racist. But you can go ahead and call Donald Trump a racist because he's a bad person and not a progressive. So that's just an example of the hypocrisy that you see in the media in terms of commentary. And at least this is commentary and not written as a news story. But there's a lot of hilarity, and I hope that your Thanksgiving table is fun and full of arguments. And in closing, I'll just tell you a funny story. We used to have these friends when I was growing up, and Mark and Nancy, if you're listening, this is kind of a dedication to your mom, and I suppose as well as your dad. Because the McLeods were great friends of us. My sister and I loved going to the McLeods for Thanksgiving because, first of all, Don McLeod was a great, great guy, even though later it was revealed that he wasn't such a great guy. But when we knew him, he was a great guy. But this guy could put away the booze. And I believe that he drank martinis. And he would sit there and drink martinis all day, and he was a stone face. The guy could drink, and it just had no seeming effect on him at all. And Phyllis and Don were kind of drinkers. Phyllis, not so much as Don, but Don for sure. And he was just fun. He was a fun drunk, and at least for us. And we would go up there for Thanksgiving, and we wouldn't even eat until like 10:30 because Phyllis wouldn't put – she'd be talking to my mom. They were childhood friends. And she would be talking to my mom. They'd be smoking cigarettes and talking and drinking martinis, and we'd be down in the basement playing cards and having seances and playing Beatles records and stuff. And my dad, who also liked to drink, and he liked Don because he liked to drink, but my dad could not – his reaction to alcohol would be that he would fall asleep. Like, my mom would get so mad at him because he could make it through dinner, and then after the turkey, he would lay down on the couch and he would fall asleep, and then Don would sit at the table and we'd drink coffee, and well, they would drink coffee, and we would drink Pepsi or whatever, RC Cola, I guess, and they would, Phyllis and Don and my mom and me and my sister and Mark and Nancy would sit there, and he would tell us stories and tell jokes and everything else, and my mom would get so mad at my dad because he'd be snoring on the couch, and it would be 1 o'clock in the morning, and she could not get him up to go home. And we lived like 45 minutes away from Palatine, way down on the south side. So that is something I remember for Thanksgiving. And you guys, as much, I would just say to the McLeods, as much as Don had problems later in his life, obviously, when you drink that much, that's what happens. He was an awful lot of fun back in those days. Now, very quickly, we know that we have a lot of pilots listening to the Bob Davis podcast ever since the EAA air show at Oshkosh this summer, and I suppose a few of you will be flying this holiday season. Here's the deal. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, which is so important, Alpha makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. It's FAA approved, and the bottom line is Alpha Systems saves lives with this fantastic AOA product, and they want to get it into your avionics package now. Here's what you do. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can see it. You can see the little, the actual device that goes on the dashboard of the plane if it's in the package. You click on that, and it will take you to Alpha's website, and you can get more information. And thank you, Alpha Systems, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast digital side. So wherever you're going and whatever you're doing, love your family and enjoy being with your family and try not to make it World War III. I'm hanging out in Minnesota this Thanksgiving, so it should be pretty quiet. But we don't want Thanksgiving to be World War III, even though sometimes it is. But it's also fun sometimes, too. And very quickly, I do one of the things that I did, and I wish I still had the tape. One of the Thanksgivings I recorded, I bugged the Thanksgiving dinner table at the McLeods, and it was wonderful. I'll never forget that. And my sister got so mad at me because she spilled the gravy boat, and it was a huge, big thing, and I recorded it, and I'll never forget that. So that was fun. Thanks for listening to Podcast 439, sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Remember, it's residential and business. So if you got a business thing going and you're going to be doing some plumbing or heating or air conditioning stuff, give Ryan a call and let them bid on the project. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And yes, ex-government trucks is now open in Forest Lake. You've heard me talking about them for years. Now they're doing the trucks, and it is super cool. So if you need a work truck, a van, a plow, as I've said, an ambulance, check them out. They're open at 356 19th Street in Forest Lake, or call 763-777-8782. They also still have the great ex-government cars, the Crown Vicks and the Chargers and the Ford Police sedans. So check out ex-government trucks, and here comes the megaphone.
Ex-government trucks.
So thanks to you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Google Music, or what is it? No, it's GooglePlay.com. So that's four or five different places where the Bob Davis podcasts live. In addition to that, thanks for checking out my new radio show at GCNLive.com. It's with the Genesis Communication Network. They distribute Alex Jones, and they did distribute Jason Lewis, so it's pretty cool. Those guys are great. And this is just a one-hour weekly show, which is kind of a a consolidation of the podcasts that we're making available to radio stations. So it'd be great if you guys want to check it out. And thanks for listening, liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm bdavis7843 on Instagram, which, by the way, is my favorite social media. And thanks for your donations also at the bobdavispodcast.com. Click on the yellow donate button when you see the picture of the ambulance there. I'm using that money exclusively for diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon coffee and beef jerky in the ambulance, and we're getting ready to head out to cover the Iowa caucuses on February 1st, so stay tuned for information on that. And if you've contributed a dollar or $200 or $100, I really, really appreciate these contributions. They are keeping the vehicle running, keeping it in tires, keeping it in gas, and everything else. And I was over there at the revetment the other day running the diesel, and I just can't wait to get back. It's all I can do to hold myself back from heading back out on the road in the ambulance. So thanks again for your contributions and really for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast and subscribing, et cetera, et cetera. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
The world keeps getting smaller. It closes round my room. Everything I feel now, hard and fast and true. My window is a spotlight on the madness down below. Takes a silent figure to make this place a home. And now the candles burn all night without you, and the moon hangs out of sight, so blue, 7th Avenue.